Hey there, welcome back to another episode of Social Echoes from True Voice Media. My name is John Steyer, and this is episode 18. As always, you can find us on iTunes and Stitcher Radio by simply searching Social Echoes. And if you like the podcast, you can give us a review, a rating, anything in between, just to let us know how you like the show and what we're doing. And the show website is www.socialechoespodcast.com. The gentleman joining me on the other side of the broadcast today is the esteemed Jay Bear. Good morning, Jay. How are you?
Hey, John. Thanks very much for having me. I am delighted to be on episode 18. Now we are old enough to vote.
Yeah, we are old enough to vote. All sorts of different things I'd like to talk to you today about, Jay. I'll be quite honest. I started to write down a bunch of questions and different topics of which we could talk about, and I was like, you know what? If only there was enough time to have two episodes, but alas, this is what we have, and I appreciate you giving me the time that you do, because I know that you're running around doing crazy different things, and I actually, one of the questions kind of came down to the communication style of all the different things that you do. So I guess, you know, now that I'm bringing it up, that's the first question I'll ask you. You have such an ease about you. You have such a great way of communicating, whether it's through your blog, your book, speaking, video, podcast. And it all comes through together so perfectly somehow. When did you kind of come to the realization that your communication was your thing?
Thanks very much. I'm glad to hear you say that. I appreciate it. I wish I could tell you that I had some sort of secret sauce there and that I was very purposeful in how I put things together, but as is the advice often given and dispensed in social media, and rightfully so, it's just sort of how I roll. So it's not, I'm not trying to be that way, it's just how I am. And I've always been a writer for way back, even when I was just starting out high school. I did a lot of writing. I was the guy who was the editor of the school newspaper over and over and over, and wrote for the, you know, city paper, and went to school to be a journalist, and ended up going in a different direction in terms of my education, but writing in particular, and also public speaking was always my thing. I was also voted, no joke, most likely to be a game show host in high school.
Oh, really?
Indeed. And I was also the guy, anytime we had like the pep assembly or whatever, you know, we're going to go beat rival football team, I was always the MC of every single one of those kind of things. So when we did the, you know, talent show, I was the MC. The assembly, I was the MC. So it's kind of always been my thing. My mom has about 65 different master's degrees in English, so that helps. And my dad is an entrepreneur and a marketer and a financial planner and you know, speaks to a lot of people and is very personable. So I think it just kind of came naturally.
So it all fits in together, and that's how you get Jay Bear. That's great.
I guess so.
One of the things that you did, and it kind of leads me to the podcast too, kind of going back into tales from an old Jay Bear's past, you had your own radio show when you were at the University of Arizona, correct?
Yeah, actually, I co-founded the student radio station at University of Arizona. That is circa 1989, I think. So I am much older than I want to be. And I co-founded that station and did a show on occasion. I didn't do a lot of on-air work because I was too busy kind of getting the station up and trying to get funding and things like that. But it was an exciting time. We were there during the transition, literally from vinyl to CD, which sounds ridiculous. But when we first started the station, you know, record labels were still giving us records and we were, you know, dropping the needle and things like that. And some of the listeners to the podcast are probably familiar with South by Southwest, the conference, which of course began as a music-only conference. And our sister station, the college radio station that sort of brought us up, if you will, and helped us get started, was the KUAT, which is the University of Texas student station. And we would go to South by Southwest every year when it was just a music festival and sleep on their floor. So I went to South by Southwest years 2, 3, and 4 as just a, you know, college radio guy, and to see what it is now compared to what it was then, it's really quite remarkable.
So how would you compare doing the radio, whether you're building just a radio station program, to what podcasting is today? Because just to give you, you know, for me, I've always loved radio. I love audiobooks. It's kind of one of the ways that I learn. So I always wanted to try podcasting in some form or fashion. How do you see it kind of comparable? What's the big difference?
Well, I mean, you know, back then you had to have an audience first, or have permission to have an audience, and then you could create content to address that audience. Now you can start with content and then build an audience. So the script has been flipped entirely, which I find very, very interesting. And of course, the mechanics of podcasting and video blogging and things of that nature allow you to do it with almost no dollars and very little friction. And while it seems natural to say, oh, Jay did radio in college and now he has a podcast, that was never a dot that I connected. In fact, I listen to podcasts, but really had never thought about having one. I've done a fair amount of video interviews on my blog in the past, but was never particularly interested in having a podcast. And Eric Boggs, who was my original co-host on Social Pros, and his company Argyle Social was a sponsor of ours, said, you know, you should do a podcast. Let's do it together. And I was like, all right, I guess. That sounds like it would be kind of fun. I mean, I wouldn't say I was kicking and screaming, but I certainly wasn't leading the charge to start a podcast. I was sort of like, yeah, whatever, kind of on a lark. And as it turns out, Social Pros, I think, is one of the most impactful things that I've ever done from a content standpoint. And I really enjoy doing it. And it's been not only a podcast that I think the people who listen to it appreciate, but it's also been a good lead generation vehicle for my company.
Yeah, it's great. I think it's becoming that for True Voice Media. It was funny. We had Ted Rubin on the podcast 2 weeks ago, and last night he must have been at some conference where he had just a whole list of people, because our at mention room on Twitter just blew up, and it was very, very welcomed.
He's a good guy. I saw him the other day at Social Fresh.
Yeah, he's terrific, and I've only known him through Google Plus Hangouts, so he's already been fantastic to us.
Good.
So, Jay, let's talk a little bit about Utility, your book, and maybe you want to give just kind of like an overview about what you kind of would consider the definition of utility to be before I delve into some of the questions.
You bet. So the new book is called Utility. That's Y-O-U, utility. The subtitle is Why Smart Marketing is About Help, Not Hype. It's coming out June 27th with Penguin Portfolio. Very excited about it. I'm going to have all kinds of special pre-order bonuses that start on May 5th. So if you go to utilitybook.com, you can get on the secret list, and then when it opens up, and we're going to have executive summaries that you get, and you'll like this, John. So if you pre-order 9 books or more from me through my special kind of pre-order thing that I'm building, if you pre-order 9 books or more, I will actually personally leave a voicemail for each person that you're buying a book for. So if you're buying a book for your whole team, or you're buying a book for True Voice Media clients, I will call all of them personally and say, hey, it's Jay Baer, and John bought you a book, and I really appreciate it. You're going to get it in June. So I foresee doing a lot of voicemails in the next 6 weeks. I need to figure out a way to do voicemails from a plane. I need to switch the technology up. But the book is all about the marketing of helpfulness. So the difference between helping and selling is just 2 letters. But those 2 letters make all the difference today. We're in this really weird situation in business where, for the first time ever, companies are being forced to compete for attention, not against just other companies that sell the same crap, but against everybody and everything. So if you look at your Google Plus, you look at your Facebook, you look at your Twitter, you look at your inbox for that matter, what you'll find is a combination of personal relationships and professional commercial relationships. So companies are saying, well, let me try and win your attention, even though what you're trying to do on Facebook is see what your mom is doing or your best friends. And that's a really difficult proposition. So I establish in the book this theory that if you focus on creating content that is truly and inherently useful, if you create utility, then the world will beat a path to your door. The definition of utility is marketing that is so useful people would pay for it.
I think that's so smart, and it's amazing that it comes at such a good time, because in kind of harkening back to the podcasts, I listen to Mitch Joel a lot, and I know that you just had him on the your show, Social Pros, and how the internet didn't blow up for having you and Mitch on the same channel, I'm not sure. My iTunes didn't respond very well. It didn't want to play it at first because it was just too massive. But
well, actually, we messed it up. We changed the technology that day on that show and screwed it all up. But
now I see.
It's the thing about podcasting, right? It's not a perfect science just yet.
No, not yet. But I've been enjoying it. But anyway, it's amazing that everyone is talking about the currency of attention, and it's so true that. To have an idea and kind of a manifesto that what utility can be and how to become a utility, it's so perfect right now. And I think people are still kind of hung up on what social media is when I say people, I think a lot of the companies in and around the Philadelphia area are still kind of trying to get a grasp on it. Not so much the really like the big guns, but you know, some of the smaller mid-sized market ones. But everyone's still kind of caught up on content generation, and if they just create content, then that's going to be fine. But you need to have the reason that people are going to want to come back to it and share it, and kind of give that word of mouth recommendation as to why it's going to be prudent for you.
Yeah, we do a fair amount of content strategy work at Convince and Convert, and of course we write a lot about content, and I read a lot about content, and do some work with Content Marketing Institute and all those guys, and so clearly a lot of companies are starting to embrace this notion of okay, let's make content, let's do a podcast or whatever, and that's great. But what I was starting to see is lots and lots of companies basically creating content that is just self-referential, right? It's basically, here's my brochure, but in 6 different formats. I'm like, that's no. That's not going to get it done, right? You have to create content that has intrinsic value, not just a different version of an ad. And so there's been a lot of great books written about content, Content Rules in particular, and a number of other ones. But what I felt we didn't have in the industry yet was a framework, was a, okay, great, we had the how, but we didn't really have the why. And so that's what I try to do with utility is kind of give people a blueprint for why this works and why to do it. And luckily, there was lots and lots of really interesting case studies that I was able to surface of companies doing it well.
You talk about frame of mind and top of mind awareness, just kind of how that's eroding. How the audience is growing with people actually having access to these different things, but their attentions are being completely fragmented. And of course, there's so much. So when you talk about frame of mind awareness, would you think that it's a great opportunity for like mobile platforms and the mobile revolution?
Oh, absolutely. We talk a lot about mobile in the book and mobile apps and content being mobile accessible, mostly just because that's how people are increasingly looking for information and consuming information, and that trend is not going to go away ever. I mean, this is the year, at least in the U.S., that we sort of crossed the chasm. Smartphone penetration in the U.S. will be 57% this year, meaning that the majority of most people's customers, and in some categories, the vast majority of their customers, have high-speed internet access at all times in their pants. And that has significant implications for the amount of content you have to create, what kind of content you have to create, how to sort of take the things that are really transactional and important about your business and make them very easy to access instantly without having to wade through a bunch of BS. So it's a very exciting time, and it reminds me a little bit of kind of where we were at in the late 90s when we sort of had the first internet boom and companies saying, hey, maybe I do need to get a website. And I lived through all that. I mean, I started in online marketing in 94, and I spent the first 6 years of my career convincing companies that they needed a website, right? Because they're like, why would I want to do that? Why would I want people to know what my prices are? Why would I want people to know you know, what our hours are when we're closed. It was crazy. And now I kind of feel we're in that same sort of psychology about, oh, wait, I need to tell people everything about my business? Because usually just the sales guys would have that answer. And now you're saying we should publish that answer on the website so that anybody can get it from their mobile phone. I'm like, yeah, yeah, you need to over-explain everything now because customers have, you know, high-speed internet access, and so they want to see the sausage being made, right? They want to know what the backstory is in ways that they didn't want to know previously.
Yeah, it's funny. I asked one friend of mine when we were just kind of walking around the neighborhood one time, you know, give me an example of something that you just bought recently. And he told me about he wanted to buy a camera for his parents. And I asked him, okay, how many different pieces of information did you start with? And he said, 3 different websites. Okay. How many testimonials? He said that 12. And automatically that's 15 pieces of content that he had to source.
Right.
That's something you talk about a lot.
Yeah.
And the same thing, my cousin and I are starting to play roller hockey again on Saturday, and we had to go out and get wheels, and he ended up buying new skates. And I started to think, you know, if we had walked into this place and not had any idea of what was happening, you know, how could we have rectified that situation? We both had mobile phones in our pockets. We both had the ability to access any manufacturer, and there could have been a way to have been kind of not upsold, but kind of helped at that point. Now we ended up having a great guy. And if Total Hockey's listening to this, Frank, the manager at Total Hockey in North Wales, you did a great job. But it's that type of thing where I guess when you're talking about frame of mind, there is the potential to kind of be more than just amazing, but be helpful, resourceful.
Yeah, in the book we talk a lot about the prevalence of self-serve information and how customers will self-educate as you and your friend did around the hockey purchase. And then what happens is once you've kind of taken that research to its logical conclusion, and you're like, you know what, I can't find any more information online, then you turn to a real person. Then you turn to sales rep guy, to Frank, and say, okay, I've kind of narrowed it down between this and this. Like, which one do you recommend? But this idea, like it used to be, what you would do is you just drive to that store not knowing anything and be like, okay, dude, I need to get new wheels. Educate me. And we don't do that anymore for two reasons. One, we actually have the ability to educate ourselves on our own terms. And two, in many cases, you actually can get better information faster yourself than you can get it from the guy. I mean, the problem is that most retail environments in particular, the guy helping you doesn't know crap, right? So you know, exception that proves the rule, right? A lot of times you go into a store and you're like, okay, this person is supposed to help me, but they don't really know hardly anything, and they certainly don't know more than Google. So why would I spend my time standing there in front of somebody when I can walk in and be like, okay, I've got it narrowed down to this, you know, to this much. And that's going to continue, and not just in retail either, in B2B and in every category. You know, what we talk about in the book is that, you know, your customers are researching you right under your nose. You don't even know. It's all those people who come to your website who don't fill out the contact us form, right? Who end up looking at 3, 4, 5, 8, 10 pages of the site but don't actually do any behavior. That's that sort of secret shopper, self-serve information crowd.
So speaking of don't know any more than Google does or doesn't know as much as Google does. It was a very big news week last week, obviously, with the events in Boston and everything else. But on our side, we had CISPA kind of went through the house. From your perspective, what kind of impact can CISPA really have on just private information and also social media?
Well, I mean, not just that in particular, but I think we've had a lot of different snapshots in time over the last 2 or 3 years around privacy and around, you know, disclosure of information and how comfortable are we as people with the direction that everything is clearly headed. I have seen in my career lots of moments in time where people sort of stood up individually or collectively and said, you know, maybe this isn't a good plan. You know, maybe this steady march toward lack of privacy isn't a net positive. I've seen that happen a bunch of times, but every time it happens, eventually everybody's like, meh, but you know what? The benefits outweigh the consequences. And it marches inexorably on. I mean, you know, Zuckerberg said it best and said it controversially a couple, 3 years ago. He said, look, privacy is dead. Get over it. And as much as that is a somewhat of a tone-deaf way of saying it and a sort of scary reality, I think it is reality. Unless there is some sort of major, major, major circumstance that shakes up everybody at their core, I don't think anything is going to change because the benefits do outweigh the consequences. Look, if you want to get off of Facebook, for example, because you're uncomfortable with how privacy is handled there, and you probably should be, but if you're like, you know what, I'm putting a flag in the ground, baby, I'm quitting Facebook. Fantastic. You know, have a good time not knowing what anybody else in the world is doing.
Yeah, and I mean, you probably come from it from two very good perspectives, obviously being an industry expert, thought leader, author, whatever verbiage somebody wants to use, but also you have two children that are of right around teenage age. So I guess you see all the other different social networks coming up and kind of how maybe even they are, maybe their views on privacy are kind of just changing. Like maybe
they're totally different. Yeah. They don't even think about it. I mean, for them, it's just air, right? I mean, they don't even think twice about it. Snapchat and all these other, you know, new ones that they're using that are strictly mobile. I mean, it's just so ingrained in their day-to-day existence. I mean, my kids spend way, way, way more time on Instagram than I do. And I love Instagram, but they use it as their Facebook. And it's a really interesting kind of behavior pattern. And you know, it's not just social networks in our traditional sense either. Like my son he's 11, and he plays some Xbox. And he has an Xbox Live account. And he does this thing, I think it's called party chat or something like that.
Yeah, because I have a 13-year-old brother who does the same thing.
Yeah, and so they're playing Xbox, right? So okay, I can understand the point of playing Xbox against one another and you have the headset on, but they don't do that. They do it where he's playing a game, and then another guy's playing a different game, and another guy's playing a different game, but they're still talking at the same time. And that, to me, I cannot even get my arms around that concept, right? So it'd be like me and you and Mitch, Joel, and Ted getting in the same room, but yet we're all going to be playing different games on different TVs and then occasionally just saying, hey, how's your game going? Like, it's so weird. It's like, if you're not going to pay any more attention to that, why even be connected at all? Like, what's the upside here? But they love it. They're, like, super into that. And that is a layer of a very thin connectivity that I just can't understand. I just really don't get it.
Whenever I hear something like that, I just say, you know what, John, you are older than you think you are, because I would never even think about doing that. Like I am of the generation that watched it go from, you know, my father's 30th birthday when he got Sega Genesis, and that was the coolest thing. I got to see Tasmanian Devil on the
Sonic
screen.
Sonic the Hedgehog, baby, yeah.
Yeah, and then it go from that to N64, Dreamcast, PlayStation, et cetera, et cetera. So I've seen these video game systems evolve before our eyes, and now it's not even that the consoles has to evolve, it's just the software so much. Now you're getting into PS4, and Xbox is going to release their newest one on May 21st. Yeah. It's crazy the stuff that they do. And it's funny, I was talking with Jeff Gibbard, the president of True Voice Media, last night, and I was just saying that, you know, it's going to be amazing whatever we see coming up next. It's like, you know, right now it's my generation and people who I think are, you know, way smarter, way savvier and more entrepreneurial than I am, doing these amazing things in the business world and just for our planet in general. But think about your son. I mean, your son's 11 years old. My brother's 13. Like, what are they going to do? What are, aside from just the two of them, what are their peers going to do? It's going to be such an incredible thing that I'm so looking forward to.
Yeah, I mean, my daughter showed me something on the iPhone that I didn't know the other day. And it was the first time either of my kids have ever sort of taught me anything about technology that I didn't already know, and that scared me to death. I was like, oh, God, here it comes. But I think it's going to be, you think about sort of where this heads and where they're going to be, is that right now computing in whatever form, whether it's tablet or phone or desktop or what have you, computing is a task, right? I'm going to go use the computer, I'm going to look something up, and you know, now we're starting to get to the point where you can engage in that task while doing something else, whether it's a dual screen environment while watching television, or in my son's case, you know, playing a game while also talking to friends around the world. But that's just the tip of the iceberg. I think that the next big thing is going to be computing as a layer, right? So that computing is omnipresent. You're always computing, whether that's Google Glass or other forms of wearable computers or other technologies that allow us to be connected at all times, whether it's a microchip implanted in your brainstem eventually or what have you. But this idea of having to go use a computer is going to seem foolishly anachronistic 10 years from now.
Yeah, I agree. And I know when Mitch Joel first said he tried on the Google Glass, he said, "These were awesome. They surpassed my expectations, but it's an intermediary technology."
Yeah.
And I have to say that up front. And that was like the first paragraph that he wrote, and I sat back and I kind of thought about it, and I said, yeah, I agree. I agree. Yeah. Even though I have no hand in, you know, really dictating what comes next or anything, you can't say that you wouldn't expect something in the next 2 years that just completely blows Google Glass out of the water. And how did we not think of this next? And then you could have, you know, the next 15 articles on TechCrunch that say, you know, 17 ways to use this new technology.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's like, give it a rest. It's been out for 5 seconds.
Well, I read a super interesting article along the same lines of intermediary technologies. I just read it yesterday, but I forget where it was. That happens a lot. About iTunes and how iTunes will end up being an intermediary technology. When you look back historically, that we went from physical media, CDs, to streaming services like Spotify and Pandora, which now seem perfectly reasonable and back then was crazy. And it's like, well, why did I ever need to own music digitally? Like, why did I need to own a track, you know, and store it on my laptop when I can just have Spotify and have access to all the music in the world almost at any time I want, whenever I want it? And it was a really fascinating look at that evolution. And I think you're right that the Google Glass could be sort of in a similar vein eventually.
Yeah, and it's really fascinating because I like the way that, and Cisco's been using television to kind of talk about just like almost teasing this whole Internet of Everything. And anybody who would be watching that, like if my father or my grandmother were watching that commercial and they would look at the Internet of Everything, what the hell does that mean? And then you see something like Disney's The Imagineers in Pittsburgh doing things with the Touche technology, like touching the plants and just the little different microchips that are in there, and how anything, a table can be a touchscreen. And I started to think, like, well, that's crazy. And then they actually break it down, and they say, well, actually, it's just based on frequencies. And even though I'm not a scientific, I don't lean in the scientific side by any means, I looked at it and I kind of like understood it. And that's when I was like, the frequencies is what's going to bring us there. Like, that's why when you touch your smartphone, like the heat from the frequency in your fingers are adapting and interacting with the smartphone. It's so incredible, and I can only imagine what we will see by the time that your son graduates high school, what we will see. It's just...
Yeah, it's not that far off. That's the part that is really bizarre. You know, it's like, okay, at this pace of change, 5 years is a really long time.
So, Jay, one last thing I want to ask you about is the social habit. And you do that with guys like Jason Falls and Tom Webster. And I feel like there's one other name I'm forgetting.
Mark Schaefer.
What a fantastic collection of information, and just kind of like, oh, I didn't know that. Scratching your head, bits of information. When's the next one due to come out? And what has you kind of really kind of like tickled in terms of just that surprises you?
Yeah, so the Social Habit Project is really from Edison Research, Tom Webster's company. I mean, they are the research arm, one of the most respected research companies in the world, among other things. They do all of the presidential election polls in this country. So on election night, when everybody called it correctly for Barack Obama and in every single precinct, they're the ones who produce that information. So Tom and his team really do the research. Jason and Mark and I are really responsible for contextualizing and explaining that research to people who are interested in social media. I don't want anybody to believe that I'm a true market researcher. I pretend to do market research, but I certainly don't in any real way. So what we're trying to do with the social habit is answer questions that brands can benefit from, not necessarily in terms of who uses social, although of course we ask that baseline information because you have to, but really why? So what are the motivations? So one of the things we did recently was a deep dive on Pinterest, and you can download that report. I think it's $99. It's like 150 pages or something just about Pinterest at thesocialhabit.com. And so we looked at things like, okay, well, what do people pin? And why? Like, what's the motivation for pinning? And we found, for example, a really big gender difference between women who pin things that they want to buy, and men who pin things, you know, just because they think it's interesting, right? It's more inspirational, or like, I think that's kind of cool. And it's like a very stark difference between how different genders use the same technology. And there's a lot of other detail in that report. And so we're trying to do that kind of research, so it goes beyond the obvious and helps people understand consumer motivations and around social technology.
Yeah, Ted Rubin, to bring his name up again, he mentioned that if it weren't for women, there would be no such thing as social media.
Yeah, that's probably true. That's probably true, because I don't know that that men, most men, innately want to share at that level of frequency and depth, but sort of, okay, well, if everybody else is doing it, I'm in too, kind of a thing. So happy to take the second step, not necessarily interested in taking the first step. Of course, and along those same lines, if it wasn't for women, there'd be no bars other than sports bars either. So.
I think that's very true. So Jay, my title here at True Voice Media is Storyteller and Social Media Swiss Army Knife. And I want to ask you a question along these storytelling lines. In your opinion, and it could be one of your favorite brands, could be a client, could be whatever, what is one of your favorite stories in social media right now?
I'll tell you one that I talk about in the utility book, because I think it reflects a lot of principles that I believe in. Hilton Hotels has this program called Hilton Suggests, where it's not their official customer service channel, but they take volunteers from different hotels around the country and say, we want you to just pay attention on Twitter, and if you can find an opportunity to help, just help. That's sort of the end of the instructions. And so they do that. So you'll find that people ask questions about restaurants or this or that, and people from different hotels that are Hilton affiliated will jump in there and not address to them, but they are strategically eavesdropping, if you will. And they jump in there and say, I can help you with that. And you know, just because we're cool, because we're good guys. Very effective program, generates a lot of goodwill. It's a utility, a lot of long-term value. But my favorite story around that program is that not too long after it was started, a year or so ago, a guy was in Memphis and he had a sick dog. And he just went on Twitter and said, hey, my dog is sick. I'm new to town. Anybody know a good vet? Well, Hilton, part of this Hilton Suggest program, saw that tweet, was monitoring local chatter, and jumped in and said, I live here. I know a vet. He's over here at 13th and Q. And the guy's like, wow, thanks. Took his dog over there. The dog was fine. All worked out great. And the guy tweeted back, you know, two or three times, like, I can't believe that Hilton Hotels, and not even Hilton Memphis, like Hilton Global, you know, went out of their way to use staff time and staff resources to direct me, just some guy, to a vet in my town of Memphis. And I just really like everything about that story, right? I like the outcome. I like what it means for brands and for brands working off script and empowering their employees to see opportunities and seize upon them. I like the real-time nature of it. I like the utility nature of it. So that's probably my favorite story right now.
Yeah, and I've heard you tell that one before. It's a very great example of everything that you talk about in utility, certainly. One that actually just happened to me as recently as last week. My girlfriend brought me dinner. I was eating said dinner and found a bit of plastic in this food. And I was like, not really a fan of this. And I'm not a big complainer. I'm really not. Like, if something, because I've worked in, you know, retail, and I've worked in, you know, restaurants before. So I understand. So if it's something that I can just kind of let slide, I do. But I was like, you know, this is a big piece of plastic in my bowl. I would like to kind of let somebody be aware of this. So I took a picture, put it on Instagram, tweeted to the company, and it was a little bit at the end of their dinner hours. So, and I wasn't in store. So it kind of was like, you know, if they don't respond to me tonight, it's fine. And they didn't. I then sent it back out the next day around noon, around lunchtime, and I got nothing back. So I was like, okay, so they don't care, which really kind of like sticks it in my head. They don't care. So therefore I'm not going to go back. I then asked a competitor of theirs on Twitter, hey, if this happened with you guys, or something along these lines happened with you guys, would you want to address it? And they said, well, yes. And then they responded with, well, wait, did something happen? Like, can we help you with anything? And I said, no. I just wanted to make sure that you guys were actually paying attention and would want to kind of address something along these lines. And that creates even more brand affinity with me, with that company that wanted to respond when there was nothing even wrong. They just saw that I was upset about something, and they thought, well, obviously, like, whether they thought about it or not, they just kind of said, well, this is a way for us to just kind of mark it down of this guy being a part of our flock. Like, he's one of us now.
Yeah.
And it's true. And it's something that I will continue to talk to companies, people, brands with about all the time, because I think it's such an important thing.
I had an experience where I was delighted by Twitter recently. It was just a couple days ago. I was driving in my car, and I was listening to Sirius XM, as I typically do, college radio guy. And Madison, who's one of their DJs, was saying, hey, we've got this new song. I'm going to play it for you. I'm not sure about it. So tweet me and let me know what you think. And this song was brutal, in my estimation. Brutal. Really bad. So next stoplight, I grabbed the phone, and I'm like, okay, Madison, this song is brutal. Make it stop. You know, I was pretty emphatic about it. So I tweet that out, go to a meeting, come back, check my phone, and the band, the actual band who made the song, had seen my tweet, had tweeted me back and said, oh, you might like our unplugged version of it. Here's a link to the video, you know? And I clicked on the link, and it was great. It was a great version of the song. I loved it. And I was like, oh, I cannot believe that, you know, a rock band, you know, A, has the time, and B, the wherewithal to be monitoring Twitter in real time, especially during daylight hours. It was pretty impressive. I still hate the first song, but I was damn impressed by the response to this.
It doesn't change your response to the first song. And it's kind of actually similar to you and Jason Falls got together for a Hoosiers game earlier in the year. And I saw it, both your channels, and I know I've met Jason. And I tweeted to both of you, just said, hey, guys, have a great time. And I don't know, it must have been Jason, I think, took the photo like kind of like this.
Yeah.
Leading back it was just the two of you, Jason giving the craziest face, you opened like a deadpan. It made my day. It was made my Saturday.
Good. Thank you. Well, the problem with that is, and much to my consternation, IU basketball games, which I enjoy going to here in Bloomington, no Wi-Fi in the building, and like essentially no connectivity of any kind. So it is very difficult to live tweet it, to do Instagram or Vine or anything, because you just can't get a connection. And if you do, it's just for a second and it drops out. So my friend is the marketing director there, and I keep saying, like, look, couldn't we just do something, a repeater tower, or it just seems like it would benefit them, right, to allow people to create media when they're in the presence of what was at one point the number one basketball team. But so far, it has fallen upon deaf ears.
Yeah. Well, listen, Jay, I sincerely appreciate all your time, all your stories, everything in between. Thank you so much. Where can people go to be social with you?
Easiest way, you can find me on Twitter at jbear, our blog, convinceandconvert.com. Don't forget the new book coming out. You can go to utilitybook.com and get on the secret pre-order list. We're going to open that up soon. I'm actually going to be in Philly in July for the National Speakers Association conference. So maybe we can get a tweet up together, something like that. It'd be fun.
I would love to. And I have a confession. I don't think I've ever had tequila, so maybe we can get some
together. What is wrong with you? Well, I mean, I know it's not really a Northeast drink, and I'm from Arizona originally, which is how I... the tequila supply is a little limited in Bloomington, Indiana, too, but we will change that. We need to find some sort of Mexican restaurant in Philadelphia that is legit, that has a bunch of tequilas. That's where we'll have the tweet up. We'll make it happen.
Yeah, and Harrison Kratz will join us. I will make that happen.
Damn right. He's absolutely.
Good buddy of mine as well.
Oh, good.
Anyway, thank you very much for listening. Thanks to Jay. We will see you guys later. Don't forget, you can always find us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and, of course, socialechospodcast.com. See you again next week. Take care. Thanks again. Bye-bye.